Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're back with Gene and Chris on the Paracast. Now, last week, ladies and gentlemen, as those of you who listen know, we had Rosemary Ellen Guiley talking about her latest book about the djinn. And that has started a very vociferous set of discussions.
Like Frankenstein and the villagers with the fire torches and the picks and pitchforks. I love it.
So basically here, if the djinn turned up, we'd probably kill them.
No, but the djinn would have a field day with the villagers.
Okay, so let me ask you a question then. If a djinn
is
being attacked by a mob of people, what do they do? Do they use their magic to defeat them?
No, maybe some Clorox and an autoclave.
Okay. Honestly, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, that was a bad joke, Gene. You know, Rosemary has been in the field for 30 years. She's helped hundreds and hundreds of people. She has studied all sorts of unusual occurrences that have been centered around oftentimes specific locations. I mean, the woman's written over 50 books. She's written 9 encyclopedias. She has a really quite a command over the folklore and legends and cultural interpretations of unusual events that stretches back thousands of years. And I think that we should at least have a listen to what she says. She's not claiming that she's come up with some sort of scientific answer. Possibly why I responded and jumped to her defense the way I did, and then, of course, was attacked for that, was because in many ways I feel that my work in attempting to identify a mechanism that may tie together paranormal phenomena, which I feel is has a treacherous quality to it. You know, I was taken to task for this, too, about pseudoscientific, mumbo-jumbo, New Age, bourgeois, and all this stuff. And, you know, I think I've come up with a pretty interesting new sort of pair of glasses and a new form of insight into some sort of potential causal mechanism that may tie together paranormal phenomena. And I think Rosemary, in much the same way, has identified another culture's interpretation that's ancient of something that may be misinterpreted in other cultures as ghosts or poltergeists or, you know, any number of, you know, tags and terms that have been applied to these phenomenal events. So, you know, I feel that instead of attacking the messenger, why not listen to what she says? And maybe instead of casting judgment that she's just being superstitious and looking at a bunch of lowbrow Neanderthal legends and superstitions, maybe she's on to something. I don't see anybody else coming up with any sort of creative thinking. They all want everything nice and pat in a little Petri dish that they can replicate. Oftentimes, breakthrough proto-science, if you will, doesn't work that way. We need to identify some sort of causal mechanism or some sort of causal agent before we can then attempt to experiment with it. And I find it very disingenuous for our forum posters to be so passive aggressive in their attacks. It doesn't serve the progress of this field any good, and it just ticks off me, the moderator. And if I want to get into a flaming war, then all I have to do is bring up a couple of topics and duck and cover, you know. So I'm off my soapbox now. Gene, what do you think about it?
Well, I think part of the problem is when you're dealing with something like this, a lot of people are looking for nuts and bolts. So when they look at UFOs, UFOs have to be spaceships, they have to be physical craft that we can touch, they have to obey what we interpret to be the laws of physics.
Well, see, that's the thing, Gene. They think they have found the nuts and bolts, and they're saying Rosemary and I are nuts.
Well, probably we're all nuts. But the key is here is we haven't found any nuts and bolts. That's the big thing. I had an article in last week's Paracast newsletter where I was basically mentioning the fact that we've had a number of UFO photos taken, but very few are really clear enough to interpret them as one thing or another, assuming that a fair amount aren't just faked. This doesn't mean that UFOs can't be photographed, but it means that getting the nuts and bolts and proving the hard evidence is really difficult. We haven't been able to do it so far. And if we just restrict ourselves to one possible solution, and some people very early on decided that UFOs were spaceships, couldn't be anything else. If we look for the simple solution, which you think spaceships, how could that be simple? But based on what we know about astronomy now, it's probably fairly simple. You know, we have a more advanced civilization on another planet in the universe. They want to venture forth into the cosmos, find similar creatures, look for life, and they come upon us. That's not a complicated thing to imagine. That's possibly true, but there are a lot of things going on there that may or may not be related to any physical visitation by E.T.
Yeah, I agree. We've had too many cases of occupants getting out and gathering flowers like it's the first time they've ever seen them.
It's almost like an act. We're seeing, for example, a hologram or a playback of something, or maybe the reason they keep looking for flowers is it's a training expedition. You know, let's go visit that primitive planet they call Earth, and let's pick up some plant samples to see how you do it. If you think about it for a moment, the movie E.T. the Extraterrestrial, where they were gathering plants or whatever, that creature was a child. It's like summer camp. So instead of having summer camp in the Adirondacks or something, you have summer camp on Earth.
Yeah, it's plausible. There's just something about it, the theatricality and the absurdity of it, that doesn't add up to...
And then E.T. puts on a show for giving the best performance to fool those dumb earthlings. Yeah.
It doesn't add up for me.
You see, that's part of the big thing about UFOs is we take things too much at what appears to be face value. Okay, E.T.'s here, E.T. says they're here to help us rather than to harm us. Whatever E.T. supposedly tells us, we believe them. We believe what we see, that what we see is an accurate representation of the real
phenomenon.
Just
like we believe our government.
Oh, please don't get me started with that. I don't care what your politics are. How do we believe government? That's another big thing about the way the world has changed. Years ago, we believed our government. You name the country. Nowadays, it doesn't matter who's in charge. I think very few people believe them. And in the Twitter and Facebook generation, information gets circulated so quickly that if people disbelieve what's being said, they have a way, an out, to deal with it.
Right. And then when we started to realize that we really couldn't believe our governments, then we relied on the Fifth Estate, the media, to give us the proper information. Now the people that buy off the politicians and the government are the same ones that own the media, so you can't believe them either.
Right. You know, they talk about liberal media, conservative media. It is corporate media. Large corporations own the media. And do you think they will allow their news divisions to report negative things about those corporations? Today we're going to feature Grant Cameron, and he's coming back to talk about a newly updated book. It's a new version of a book he wrote some years back. It's called UFOs, Area 51, and Government Informants. And, of course, the subtitle is A Report on Government Involvement in UFO Crash Retrievals. We know what he's going to talk about. That's Grant Cameron, and he wrote that with T. Scott Crane. And just as a sidelight here, just very recently, I had lunch with Scott Ramsey, who wrote the book about Aztec, and he says there's going to be a new edition coming out, and he thinks there's more compelling evidence out there, so we'll have to see. In the meantime, we have so many questions in our question bank for Grant Cameron, we may not have to do any work ourselves. Just read the questions. We have one that sets a record with over 24 questions. Grant Cameron, author of UFOs, Area 51 and Government Informants, with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, you know what I believe? I believe that successful teamwork is the foundation for successful business. And when you meet face-to-face, well, of course you work more effectively. But with clients and coworkers spread out across the globe and on the go, coming together can be impossible. which is why I use GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It's the powerful and simple way to meet and collaborate online. With GoToMeeting, it takes just a click to share your screen and work on your documents in real time. And with a webcam, you can see everyone in HD video. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Don't wait for this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button. Use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting. Because remember, neighbors, meeting is indeed believing.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you have the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tatler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com. For emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
We've lived in this neighborhood for years. We have an alarm system, and all of our doors have deadbolts. They kicked in our door, and we're in and out of our house in about 5 minutes. The police arrived in about 20 minutes, but they were long gone with our TV, jewelry, and my guns. I kept thinking, what if my family had been home? The police officers said that more than 85% of break-ins are through a door, and that deadbolts alone don't stop intruders. The officer told me to go to EasyArmor.net if we wanted something that would actually stop an intruder. Easy Armor reinforces all of the weak points on your doors and is guaranteed to prevent kick-ins. I was surprised at how little Easy Armor costs, and I installed Easy Armor in about 30 minutes.
Visit EasyArmor.net. That's the letters EasyArmor.net. Or call 888-58-ARMOR. That's 888-582-7667. EasyArmor.net. Ultimate door security made easy.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Joining us on the Paracast this week is Grant Cameron. He and T. Scott Crane wrote a book called UFOs, Area 51, and Government Informants, subtitled A Report on Government Involvement in UFO Crash Retrievals. Grant, welcome back to the Paracast. And the first question I have here is, this book is evidently an update to a previous book. Can you tell us a little bit about the previous book and what do you think has changed very briefly? We'll get into more detail as we go along.
Okay, Gene. Basically, the book, I think, was published in 1990, 1991. What has basically changed in the book is was sort of mostly an update to material that was in the book. In the original book, we had the Area 51 story. We had the Canadian government story, the Eric Walker president of Penn State University story. We had all that, And what happened was it had been published by MUFON. It was the first book published by MUFON. And basically, unless you were a member of MUFON, you couldn't buy the book. It wasn't in bookstores. There was no such thing as Amazon.com, stuff like that. So it had its 1,000 run, and that was basically it. And nobody really heard the story. What happened was that Richard Dolan, when he was putting out his UFOs and National Security Part 2, had used some of the material in the book. He had gone through it and had put in the Canadian stuff and the Eric Walker stuff. Thought it was fairly good and came to me and basically said, could we do an update and publish the book again? He thought there was some stuff in there that people should be notified of. What was taken out was the South African crash, which has always been very controversial. We had it in the original book. We took that out because I added about 100 pages based on new material related to MJ-12, Bill Moore, all that sort of stuff. And so we pulled that, and we changed the name of the book from, it used to be called UFOs, MJ-12, and the Government. And we took out the MJ-12, not because it wasn't significant, because I did add quite a bit of material in MJ-12, but because the book was now sort of a book that was going onto Amazon.com to the public, and 99.9% of the people in the public really wouldn't know what MJ-12 was and probably couldn't care less.
Well, okay, but you had 100 pages about MJ-12, so certainly you care a lot about the subject. So let's just re-educate some of our listeners, a lot of whom have heard about MJ-12, and we've had you on the show before. We've had other people who have explored the subject. We've had Stan Friedman. We've had people who do not believe in MJ-12 as being real, such as Kevin Randall. So very briefly, tell our listeners once again what MJ-12 is, and then let's go into that 100 pages of new material.
Okay, basically MJ-12 is the rumored control group. Supposedly, according to the documents that were released in the mid-1980s and officially released in 1987, it refers to a group that was started by President Truman, a group of 12 people who were sort of like scientific military type people who control the information on the UFOs. It's basically, the name's probably been changed, but it was a group started in 1947, and they are the guys who run the whole show.
Who were these people?
Originally, it was people like Vannevar Bush, who we always say is a significant name, who was the science advisor to President Roosevelt, who was sort of the technological czar during World War II for all the military developments like the atomic bomb, proximity fuse, jet engine, all the stuff that was developed during World War II. He was one of the key people on there. You had people like various scientists. The one that was controversial was Menzel, who was the great skeptic, UFO skeptic. His name appeared on there. And when I reviewed it, I say it really, there's a lot of controversy about this. I say basically the documents are all still phony. They're not real documents, but they are very significant documents in that what they're doing is trying to tell us a story. So the names on there, really, I haven't really put too much significance in them. I'm more interested in all the documents as a whole, because when you come right down to it, there's not just the MJ-12 document, which was released by Bill Moore, Jamie Chandray, and Stanton Friedman in 1987. There are actually about 4,000 pages of MJ-12-style documents, which indicates that this is an organization releasing this material. It's not Bill Moore hoaxing it. It's not Richard Doty hoaxing it. This is an operation of some sort to try to get something out to the public.
Okay, but unlike what Stanton Friedman says, you don't believe those original MJ-12 documents, as they were presented, are genuine. But someone put it out there. Okay, so if someone put it out there, why? What message are they trying to deliver?
Well, I think they're trying to deliver the message of MJ-12. They're trying to get this basic idea that there was a group, and it goes through the whole book. If you take a look at the whole book, there's a whole series of things that they want out, like the idea of Area 51. So we go into the whole Area 51 and my version of how it was a setup, how they basically wanted out. They thought the story was going to fall apart. They didn't realize that Knapp was going to take this and run with it.
But you're also giving us a little bit of inside baseball here. So let's try to expand this. Knapp being George Knapp, a
yes.
Las Vegas TV broadcaster who also occasionally has been a co-host or a guest host on Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah,
he's been
and
on the Paracast. We know him well. He does a lot of research. And he early on did a lot of work in publicizing what Area 51 was all about. But I want to get back to MJ-12, and then we'll get into Area 51. We're kind of going over the map here. So I'm still kind of dim on this, and maybe you can explain in more detail for our listeners. We certainly hope they'll read the book. But in the meantime, that we have the fake documents. We want to send the message. Is that message strictly that the U.S. government took UFOs seriously? Forget about Donald Menzel or Vannevar Bush or any of those people.
Yeah, that there was a group, that there was a group that was put out there. There was a control group, and that it was taken seriously by the government, and sort of indicating who these people were. The basic core of the thing is true. The reason I say that the original MJ-12 document is not accurate, I used to think that it might have been accurate, was the fact that I now believe the evidence indicates there was a live alien at Roswell. And the basic original document talks about Roswell, and it talks about four dead aliens. So I would say that that's inaccurate. So, but basically what it is it comes down to Bill Moore, and Bill Moore is the guy who released the MJ-12 document, who sort of was the puppet master of this whole organization. And the story goes back to his encounter. What people don't realize who haven't been in UFOs that long is that before Bill Moore came on the scene, nobody knew what Roswell was. Bill Moore had done this book called The Roswell Incident in 1980, and he became very famous for this. He got a lot of credibility from media people because it was basically like a documented type book. So before Bill Moore released that book, nobody knew about Roswell.
Now we should expand on this too. The book was co-authored by Charles Berlitz.
Yes.
Who wrote The Bermuda Triangle and The Philadelphia Experiment. And by the way, I knew Berlitz in those days. Long gone. And also Stanton Friedman had uncredited participation in the Roswell book.
And that's significant, which I'll explain in a minute. But Bill, the book is released, and as Bill describes it, within days of the release, he goes on a publicity tour for the book. And he gets a phone call from, I believe it was Kirkland Air Force Base, and this guy comes on and leaves a message with Bill. He doesn't take the call, but the message is he's the only guy who knows what he's talking about.
We're going to find out what he was talking about in a moment. Grant Cameron joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hey, neighbors. Got a small business or a large company that needs to be online 24/7? Well, here's the little secret. To make sure your site is always online, you need world-class DNS service from Dyn. That's D-Y-N. For years, Dyn has been helping companies ranging from the scrappy young startup to the giant media moguls of the world with making sure websites are fast and always available and that your emails are getting delivered. DYN. Get faster internet by using Dyn for DNS. Visit dyn.com/podcast30. Fill out the contact form or start shopping right away and save 30%. By using the promo code PODCAST30 at checkout. Again, visit dyn.com, that's dyn.com/podcast30. Check them out today.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is Renovation Teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation Tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
Are you still a traditional smoker?
Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
Weakened by GMOs, stressed out about money, and blasted by the electric environment. Hi, I'm Pastor Jenny, and that was the state I was in back in 2010. Then I learned about RNA drops. I learned that 97% of my DNA that scientists have called junk is actually packed with millions of gene switches that play a critical role in controlling how my cells, organs, and other tissues behave. I learned I don't have to put up with disease, decay, or decline like I'd been conditioned to believe. I began taking RNA drops, a 100% natural formula designed to turn on those switches and provide me with amazing health and joy. Learn more about RNA drops and order a free sample today. Visit rnafreesample.com. That's rnafreesample.com. Or call toll-free 888-577-3703. Pay only shipping and handling for a free 30-day supply of RNA drops. Get the information you need and the health you want at rnafreesample.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
The book is UFOs, Area 51, and Government Informants. It's a reworking of an older book that goes back over 20 years. The guest is Grant Cameron. And now we're talking about William Moore, who was the co-author of the Roswell book that Charles Berlitz participated in, the first major Roswell book that brought everything to public attention. He's on the first publicity tour, and he gets a call from someone. Tell us more.
So he gets the first call. He ignores the first call. The first call basically says, you're the only guy that knows what you're talking about. He's continues the book tour. A couple days later, he gets a phone call again. At the end of the show, there's a phone call comes in, and they say, do you want to take this phone call? It's from Offutt Air Force Base in the Midwest. So Bill takes the phone call. It's the same message. You're the only guy that knows what you're talking about. We'd like to have a meeting. So Bill arranges this meeting. He meets with this guy who later would become known as the Falcon. And there are two Falcons. This is the sort of the high level CIA guy who's in charge of this operation. He meets with Bill Moore and he says a very critical thing. He says to Bill Moore, he says, I represent a group of high level government people and we want the policies changed regarding UFOs and we're willing to help you. And then the key is he said, we're willing to help you without breaking the law. And that's why I say all the documents have to be phony because whether you're the president, and last year they went after Obama for leaking classified material related to the drones and the hacking of the computers with the Iranian nuclear program. If they can go after the president for releasing classified material, the same thing's going to happen with anybody else. You release classified material, you're going to jail. So basically what they're doing is they're releasing material. The original MJTOL document and all the rest of it is they're releasing very important material, but what you do is you fictionalize it. The same as if you're a CIA agent and you want to tell the story of how you saved America from imminent danger or whatever. And they say you can write up your story. What you got to do is you got to take the classified material out. You got to change the dates. You got to change the names. You got to fictionalize the whole thing and then you can release your material. So that's what I believe they're doing based upon what Bill Moore had originally said. And Bill Moore's original situation was he was this very prominent author who just released this very prominent book. He gets this approach. He gets two names. He gets the Condor and the Falcon. And what he does is he goes and he runs this through the head of news at CBS in Los Angeles. And this guy vets these two guys. And so Bill Moore, when he's defending what he did, said, I did what any researcher worth his salt would have done. I was approached by these high level people. I checked their credentials. It showed that they were who they claimed to be, they wanted to help me, and I think anybody would do the same thing I did. And basically what he did is he stepped into the world of the government classified material, and they started to feed him material. Now, what's significant that comes up is that in 1981, after he makes his contact with the Falcon and he starts receiving all this material, he states that the material is coming in so fast and so furious that he needs a partner. Now, as you pointed out before, Stanton Friedman had helped him with the Roswell story. And Stanton Friedman probably was the most prominent researcher at that time, as he is now. Very long, long career, very respected. But does he go to Stanton Friedman to get him to help with this, all this material that's coming in June of 1981? No, he goes to Jamie Chandra. And in the UFO community all the years, we always wondered a number of questions. Why did the original document, the MJ-12 document, arrive in Jamie Chandra's mailbox? Why didn't it go to Bill Moore? And why did Bill Moore not pick Stanton Friedman to help him uncover all this material? Why did he go to Jamie Chandra, who was supposedly a producer, a TV producer, film producer in Los Angeles, who had no background in UFOs at all? Now, in an interview in 2004, Bill Moore did with Greg Bishop, who was one of the few people he talked to after he left the field. Greg Bishop has a radio show in Los Angeles. He told Bishop on this show that the reason that Jamie had a CIA background, that Jamie had worked for the CIA on some various problems and issues and stuff like that. And then in the book, I released the fact that Bill Moore had been involved early on, and that I identified Bill Moore also as a CIA asset, that Bill Moore had told a researcher by the name of Bill Steinman, who helped us in the book with various things. He had told Bill Steinman that he had been recruited by the CIA when he was at university, and that he had done some footwork for the CIA. He had written a number of reports for the CIA, and then he had left the field. And when he got into UFOs, he reestablished his intelligence connections, and that's how he got all these birds. That's how he was able to get these high-level people, because he had this sort of background. And people would know that Bill Moore was fluent in Russian. He could speak and write Russian. So he had this sort of background that had given him access to intelligence sources. So this is what's critical. He picks Jamie Chandra, so you have these two guys who are basically CIA assets who...
So it was a put-up job. Long and short of it is, this was a put-up job. Deliberately, you send this material, which happens to be fake. And if we look at it today, though, if I ask Stanton Friedman today,
yeah,
Stan, and I've known Stan for 30 years, over 30, 40 years,
yeah,
whatever, are the MJ-12 documents the original ones, the so-called Eisenhower briefing document?
Mm-hmm.
Is it real? He will say it is.
Yeah, he'll say there's three real ones, and the other hundred documents that Bill and Ryan and Bob Wood got are all phony.
Explain who Ryan is.
Well, there was, as I said, there were thousands of other pages of documents that came out, which came through a guy by the name of Tim Cooper. And those were analyzed by Bob Wood, who had worked for Douglas Aircraft, who's an engineer, very respected, well-known guy, and his son Ryan Wood. And they basically took these documents, and based upon what Bob Wood knew from his intelligence backgrounds and stuff, they started analyzing all these other documents that appeared after Bill Moore left the field. So these started to appear in 1991, 93, 94. There's a pile of documents that appeared. And they analyzed all these other, which were called the new MJ-12 documents. And Stanton would say, those are all phony, but the three that he got are real. Same as now Robert Collins is making the statement saying that Bob Wood had determined that 80% of the new MJ-12 documents were real, which begs the question, if you've got friends inside the government who are giving you real documents, if they're giving you 80% are real, why would the same friends of yours give you 20% of phony documents? It's the old question of how do you determine what's real? I think the material that they're releasing, because I dealt a lot with Ryan Wood, and one particular document I thought was very significant, and the reason they wouldn't publish it was because there was a spelling mistake. It was a thing that had to do with Curtis LeMay. I knew the background of the document. I thought it was very significant, and yet they spelled Curtis LeMay's name wrong on this document. So that was where I sort of got the idea that they were trying to get across very important material that would indicate what was going on, and yet you do it in a fictionalized form so that nobody breaks the law. And that's basically how they're doing it.
Okay, so, you know, I want to tell you that I'm listening to all this, and it's very intricate, and we have thousands of pages of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember a line in a movie called Ruthless People, where Danny DeVito uses the term baffle them with BS, and I won't spell out the term. And it sounds like they're doing that. They're just filling our minds with all this nonsense.
Well, it's classic disinformation, Gene.
Okay, sure. The point being here is if you fill everybody with disinformation, but there is some real information among the core of this, how do we know then what that real information is? How do we prove that information? How do we find the signal in all that noise? And thousands of documents, we're talking about an awful lot of noise there. We have this Grant Cameron, who with T. Scott Crane wrote a book called UFOs, Area 51, and Government Informants. The subtitle is a report on government involvement in UFO crash retrievals. And as you're hearing in the first part of this interview with Grant, there's a lot of stuff to go over, and we have so many questions. I'll tell you now, we probably won't get to all of them. Just Chris and I getting coverage of our own questions is going to take a while. We're going to do our best. There's a lot of information here to dissect. If you have any comments or questions, neighbors, don't forget to write us news@theparacast.com. News@theparacast.com. With Gene and Chris, you're in
The Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Fortean phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
You've heard about our MRE smorgasbord. Now, Long Life Food Depot introduces the most unique, safe, and longest-lasting way to stash emergency food, the Eat Pod. Most survival food products recommend an ideal storage environment, including low temps, low moisture, and low oxygen. If you're storing in a basement, too humid. Garages and attics, too hot. But the waterproof, double-walled, high-density polyethylene patent-pending Eat Pod is a unique roll-away food bunker that creates the perfect condition. Can be buried up to 30 feet and can keep your survival food supply safe, secure, dry, and virtually undetectable for 25 years or more. Get full details on the Eat Pod at eatpod.com, spelled EATPOD.com, or call 800-601-2833. That's 800-601-2833. The Eat Pod from Long Life Food Depot. Since 1983, sending real food to your real future.
Over 50,000 satisfied squatting customers can't be wrong. If you suffer from difficult or painful bowel movements, join the thousands who are finding success with a Squatty Potty. Not a cleanse, ointment, or pill, Squatty Potty is a simple, lightweight, yet sturdy footstool that fits around any toilet and elevates your feet. Squatty Potty improves your posture, and that allows proper alignment of the colon. The result is faster, more effective elimination and relief from nagging constipation, hemorrhoids, IBS, and bloating. Squatty Potty is doctor recommended and endorsed and comes with a 60-day hassle-free money-back guarantee. The Squatty Potty, a healthy step in the right direction. Squatty Potty starts at just $34.95 and can only be ordered by calling 855-628-1099 or through our website, squattypotty.com, spelled SQUATTY potty.com. Squatty Potty, healthy colon, happy life.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
This is Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
We continue with Grant Cameron, with Gene and Chris in the Paracast. And now let's focus on the disinformation. So we're being inundated with all this junk, in the midst of which is some real stuff. So now, how do we figure out what the real stuff is and separate it from all the junk?
Well, that's the problem. Let me address the disinformation, because I say it's different. I say it's information covered with disinformation. Let me give you two examples. Jacques Vallée talks about this. He said, you know, something really doesn't make much sense here. Why would the U.S. government go through all the work to create all this disinformation to disinform a group of people, ufologists, who really have no influence and no effect in the general public? We have nothing. I mean, you and I listen to your show, and there's going to be a few people listening to the show, but basically nobody in the public really cares what we do. We really don't have any significant impact on the New York Times, Washington Post, on anything. We're basically just putting this thing. So the idea that they need to disinform us doesn't make any sense. They're basically trying to get us out of 1947. The idea they're trying to get across what Vallée, Hal Puthoff, and Kit Green sat down in 1987, and they looked at the same thing. You got all this signal. What is the noise? What is the core story? And that's what they called it, the core story. What is in all this stuff that we can basically believe? What do we know for sure? And their core story was basically the fact there had been a crash, that they'd been back engineering this stuff, really doing very well, and the idea of the live alien. Now, the second point about this is the idea of whistleblowers in the United States is in a United States phenomenon. It does not really happen in any other country. I come from Canada, and the Canadian government got out of the UFO business about the same time as the Americans in the late 60s. In the Canadian government, I've been in this for 37 years. I could not tell you whether the Canadian government is involved. I would not know which agency to point you to. I have no idea where their stuff is, who's running it. The idea of this thing of dropping all this material is an American phenomenon where all these people are coming out. Now, in the Canadians got out in the same time, they have not said a thing since they got out of the UFO business. They just, you don't know who to ask. There's nobody talking about it. And basically, they're out of it. The American government was in exactly the same position in December of 1969. They got out of the Blue Book. It was a total PR nightmare. It was the worst thing that was going on, because every time there was a sighting, they had to put a U.S. Air Force officer to make some sort of garbage explanation of what somebody had seen the night before. And they could barely wait to get this off their hands. So in December 1969, at the end, just before Christmas, when all the reporters had gone home in Washington, they released the fact that they've shut down Blue Book. They're out of the business. And as I've said numerous times, they could sit there and watch NFL football and Dancing with the Stars for the rest of their life. They never had to talk about UFOs ever again. So the idea was, keep quiet. It'll go away. Nobody has to do any PR. Nobody has to make any explanations. What do they do? Instead, in 1972, they call Bob Emmenager and Alan Sandler. They call them to Norton Air Force Base. And these are the guys who don't have to talk about UFOs. They call them to a clean room at Norton Air Force Base, and they say, oh, we'd like you to do these documentaries on different stuff for DARPA and put the Defense Department in a better light. And, oh, by the way, we'd also like to get you at the end. We want you to hide this documentary under the other documentaries. We'd like you to do a documentary on UFOs. And they go to the Pentagon. They walk into the Pentagon, and they sign a contract. This is not, you know, under the table. They sign a contract, and they do a documentary on UFOs. And Bob Amenegger has told the story probably 50 times about how they were able to walk everywhere, and all the Blue Book people had to talk to them. And they talked to Arthur Lundahl, who was the head guy at the CIA for UFOs, and everybody sort of cooperated. So the idea is, if you're out of UFOs in 1969, why in 1972 would you put all sorts of stuff on the fire and put gas on it and get the fire going
and
again?
And promise Amenegger the home and Air Force Base footage.
And promised him, and they had it, and they had it. This is a story that I say is a book. I mean, this is probably the most dramatic story inside ufology. They were promised the film, and they had the film in their possession, and they had, at the end, it was 1973-74, is the Watergate period, and just when they're going to do the film, when they're going to put the film in at the end, they're told, you got to move the film back. And Bob tells a story about this heavy-set guy in this small Datsun with his wife, and they drive this thing back to the Pentagon and stuff like that. And yet, in the film, they're offered three different vantage points where they're shooting this thing in May of 1971 at Holloman Air Force Base. In the documentary, Bob, it becomes known that there's 8 seconds of film from the Holloman film. So I phone up Bob, and this is where it comes to this disinformation thing. I said, Bob, there's 8 seconds of film. And finally he said, yeah, there's 8 seconds of the film from the original film in there. And I said, well, why would they give you 8 seconds of the film? I thought you told me they pulled the film back. And he said, well, yeah, but it was just background. It really didn't mean anything. And I said, but why would they let you put it in? And he said, well, it didn't show the craft, and it didn't show the aliens. And that comes back to the same thing where you take a real story and you fictionalize it. So that you, if you see the object, if you see the UFOs past, present, and future, you'll see the thing, and they show this clip of Holloman, the hills around Holloman, and you can actually see where the film sort of breaks, and you see this object, but you can't see the actual shape of the object. It's just this object, this bright object, 6 o'clock in the morning coming over the hills. So the whole idea is that it's the same thing as the Chase Brannon story, which we can sort of relate to later.
Another interesting story. But this is getting very complicated. And I want you to simplify it, because we're nearing almost a third of the show so far, and there's so many questions we'll never get to all of them.
Okay, but basically it's the same thing. You don't describe the alien, which is classified. You don't describe the actual craft, a close-up of the craft, but you can show this object coming in at a distance. So you're getting the story across, but you're controlling the classified aspects. The same as this Chase Brannon guy who comes out last year and says, I saw this box. There was no box. He fictionalized it. He says there's a box. I'm not going to describe what was inside the box, but I can tell you that Roswell happened and it involved extraterrestrial bodies. So he's basically telling you the story without giving you any of the classified details, which is against the law. They'll throw him in jail. They'll throw Amenegger in jail. They'll throw anybody in jail who actually gets a piece of classified information and puts it into the public.
Yeah, I just have one question about all this. Wouldn't it be simpler to just deny everything rather than fill people with all this information? All that does is inflame the fires.
Exactly. That's my whole point. I mean,
it seems like such a waste. Why create all these documents that are fake? Why do that? What's the point?
For some reason, they want the answer out. They want it partly out. If they wanted the story really released, it's very simple. You take your top guy, you take a bunch of documents, you go to the New York Times, you go to the Washington Post, the story's out. So they don't want the story out. It's evident. But they could keep quiet. I said in 1969 they could keep quiet, the same as the Canadians and a number of other governments in the world, and not talk about it, and it would go away.
It's like an incremental disclosure process, basically.
That's what I'm saying they're doing, because neither makes sense to say that you could do it with the Canadians and you could make the story go away. Just shut up and quit talking about it. And I spend a lot of my time talking about this, Ronald Pendolfi and Kit Green and Arthur Lundahl, these guys from the CIA, top guys in the CIA who have been interacting with the UFO community since 1954, dropping stuff into the UFO community. In fact, Bob Amenegger tells the story about dealing with Arthur Lundahl, who was the original guy and how he was given this story about the CIA channeling an alien in 1959. And he gets the whole story. The CIA gives him the whole story. And then he says to Arthur Lundahl, can you come on camera and describe this? And he said, you don't understand, Bob. I'm on duty. I can't go on camera. So they get Robert Friend, the former head of Blue Book, and he goes on camera and describes the story about the CIA channeling an alien. So why would they give you that story to put in a documentary in the mid-1970s? It's a between thing. It's not that they don't want it completely out. They don't want to spill the milk, because once you spill the milk, then you lose the classified material and you can't put the milk back in the glass. They want this half position where they're sort of getting the story out. They're sort of, it's almost like the Bin Laden thing. I mean, the Bin Laden gets killed. Within 24 hours, there's two different stories. Nobody knows really what happened there. All we know is that they got Bin Laden. And they put out all these different types of stories. It's, you know, it's a Black Hawk helicopter, and then they got pictures of the stealth, and you got all these different channels of information that throw people off to what the actual truth is, but the basic core story is getting out.
Huh. I'm exhausted.
your tax dollars at work, Gene.
Speak for yourself. Okay, if I made enough money to pay a lot of tax dollars, I'd worry about it. But this is true with almost everything. We're spending a lot of money on this ridiculous exercise in supposedly educating people about UFOs and what's really going on here. But no, we don't want to do that, because the official posture on the part of the U.S. government is that UFOs aren't real. They're conventional objects or phenomena. So what's the point of all this? The mind boggles. But, you know, we should begin, now that we've covered some of the disinformation stuff, to look into the actual crash retrievals themselves to see where they pass muster. The book is UFOs, Area 51 and Government Informants. Grant Cameron and T. Scott Crane wrote the book. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.